You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. I'm James, and I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Luke LaCoy.
Hey, hey. Tardy as always.
Dude, you have bedhead. Were you sleeping? Did I wake you up?
No, you know, like, you know how we're always wearing masks? I'm expressing myself through my hair lately. That's the new thing.
That's the way to do it. I was going to, you know what? Speaking of expressing yourself, I was going to shave my head bald, but my wife was like, I will not kiss you. I will not touch you. I will not do anything if you shave your head bald. So I was like, all right, I got to keep this mop that I hate on my head and I'll just deal with it. You know, if I do it for love, right? I'll do anything for love. What is the Meatloaf song? I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. So I guess I won't get a haircut. I guess that's what I won't do. All right. So now that we're jumped into all this, we have a very special guest all the way from Denver, Colorado. He's a funny guy. He has a great book. Please welcome the very funny, the very talented Mr. Mark Masters. Mark,
yeah,
welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
Nice, Luke, it's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I found you because of your book.
Okay.
And I read your book and I was like, wow, this is a really honest view of the first year of comedy. Like, most people would never want to talk about their first year ever. Like, I know I don't. I'm like, I was terrible. But you, that's a gutsy move. Like, what made you, what kind of, give us your origin story and then what made you want to write that book?
Yeah, sure. So for those of you who aren't watching online, I'm a little bit older, older than your average starting open micer.
Okay. Has anyone ever told you look like Tony Hawk?
No, sometimes I get the CNN guy. Who's
Anderson Cooper?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're much cool. You're much cooler. You're like Tony Hawk. You look like Tony Hawk to me.
All right. Yeah. Well, I got the hat to hide the.
That's probably what it is.
I haven't had a haircut since March. It's like, you know, party in the back, but JCPenney during the pandemic in the front. It's not a quality business, this mullet that's going on at this point. But anyways, so I kind of wrote this. The book's called Not Good Yet, notgoodyet.com. You can get more info. I'm happy to sign one and mail it to you or send you a free audio book if you're listening to this. Reach out. You can find a way to contact me through my website. I'm not on Facebook or anything like that. But I wrote the book about my first 6 months and 100 mics getting started in comedy. And I'm really glad I did it now, meaning I did it several years ago because I couldn't write the same book now. You know, I'm still awful in a lot of ways and I fail every day at writing and anytime I get on stage virtually or real stage. But the failure is what makes you better. And, you know, back then I thought I was maybe kind of good. And now, you know, I watch video of 2 years ago and it's awful. I was really bad. So I was in a different place and I wrote that book at a time and a place where I couldn't tell that same those stories today. So it's just a bunch of different stories about what it's like to get started in comedy. And I travel, I'm based in Denver, which I think Denver, Colorado, the best comedy market in the country. Maybe New York or LA has us, but I'd say third, no problem. We've great clubs and people, and it's just great energy. It's an awesome place. But I go to New York City and LA in the book and talk about them some. I would say if you pick up the book and read it, I wasn't maybe fair to LA. I didn't have a great LA experience, but I've since been back to LA and had an amazing experience. So if and when I do write another book, it'll probably be more like LA is amazing, New York City, not so great. But in the book that I wrote, New York City just blew my mind. Like at the time, this is 2.5 years ago, I saw Andrew Schultz at the Cellar and kind of nobody had heard of him. I mean, maybe a few people. He's and even now, like regular people maybe haven't heard of him, but in the comedy community, everybody knows who he is. And I saw him twice in two nights and he just blew me away. And I dedicated a couple pages to him and his story. And that was just like a real surprise to me that he blew up afterwards. So that was kind of cool. So it's just a bunch of story. You know, it's your typical, if you've been to an open mic, it's brutal, you know, long waits, not fun. It's a lot of that in the story. And if you're trying to get started as a comic, it's a great, I've heard from many comedians, people beginning comedians that I've sent the book to, that it's helped them enormously. Because it kind of previewed what they were going to get into. And it was a lot of fun. It was cool.
Yeah, no, I love it because most of us, when we start comedy, we kind of gloss over that first year of like, hey, we know we're going to be bad. We know it's going to suck. you know, this, that's the year that either you give up on comedy or you just push through. If you can push through that first year, then it's just a matter of getting over the next couple of years, building your voice, building, you know, jokes and all that stuff. But that first, I would never, if I would have written down my first year, I would have written, I hate this. Why am I doing this? I'm an idiot. You know, like literally I would have wrote like terrible things. And LA, I think you did it. I think you were fair because LA open mics are so difficult. They're so hard, right?
They are hard and they're so spread out.
Yes.
I was shocked by it. Like you could drive an hour between mics and this literally happened to me. I drove 45 minutes and the mic got canceled at the last minute.
Yep.
Like in Denver, if that happens, you just go 10 minutes down the road. There's like three or four mics a night. It's really easy logistically. Yeah. But yeah, I'm a big believer in measuring things and like improving incrementally. And so the structure of knowing I was going to write the book, I think really helped me because I was kind of keeping a diary and tracking things. And I was always in the back of my head thinking, am I getting better? Is there improvement? And so, yeah, that was a lot of fun. And afterwards, it's become a pretty neat marketing tool for me. You know, I'm a nobody in the scheme of comedians at this point, even in the Denver market, I'm definitely a nobody. There are literally 200 comedians ahead of me in the pecking order. So many. But if I go to, you know, Iowa City, Iowa, I can call up a library and say, hey, I want to do a reading or a book signing or a small bookstore. You know, can I get my book into your bookstore on consignment? It gives me something to do and some swag to sell after a show. I mean, some of my best shows have been where I sell. You know, I remember the first show I ever headlined was in Boulder, and I sold four books that night at $20 a piece, which was $80. And I got paid $50 for the set. And so I made $130, which I'm pretty sure at that point was more than I had made the whole year before that in comedy. It was incredible. So
getting your first comedy paycheck is always the best. That's yeah. The one that makes you feel good where you're like, oh, I can do this. Okay. All right. People will buy.
I think, to be totally fair, I was probably above my pay grade at that point. I think basically what happened was I went to an open mic and I had a really good set and there was a booker in the audience and she scheduled me for the show. Whether I deserved it or not is kind of water under the bridge at this point. I worked really hard and did my best. I did 30 minutes at a time that I couldn't do 30 minutes. The only other similar situation was a show I did in Aspen, Colorado, which is a 4-hour drive from Denver. And it was like an epic snowstorm and most of the comedians bailed. And I got one other comic out there and he did less time than he thought he was going to do. And I ended up having to do 40. I did like 48 or 52 minutes. And this was about a year and a half into comedy. And, it was not terrific. You know, there was a good 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. But sometimes it doesn't matter. Like the audience there was really thirsty for comedy. Like they wanted to laugh. They wanted to have fun. And I just refused to be scared. And I had like literally a piece of paper with every bit and joke that I'd ever done, even bad stuff, and just went through it and kind of, riffed with the audience. And so sometimes it's trial by fire and you just got to, like I said earlier, you got to fail a lot to get better. I really believe and that's not my idea. That's like generations of comics have said that you got to fail. I mean, some people say for 10 years, that's what's in my head, and 10 years in, I could be a professional telling jokes for a living. And that's the coolest thing I can imagine.
Yeah. Luke, did you have a question?
Okay. So did you say that you started comedy in Denver originally?
Yep.
And how was the open mic situation? Like what were your first couple open mics like?
Yeah. So the first thing I did was I went to open mics without performing. So what happened to me, and not to spoil stories in the book, this isn't like that. Nobody really cares about this, but I basically had a New Year's resolution. And I kicked the can down the road until about June, so about 6 months. And then I started going, what's that?
You're a real comedian, Mark. That's what they all do.
Exactly. And I wrote, I was writing stuff down and trying to get stuff together. And then I finally went to a mic on a Friday night, Three Kings. Nathan Lund ran that mic that unfortunately has gone out of business during the pandemic, but an incredible mic. And I had I was literally sick to my stomach. Like being there, even though I knew I wasn't getting on stage, I was so petrified and scared, like I was sick. But the other thing that happened was, and I've heard this from other comedians too, so I hope people don't take offense to this. Some of the comics were so bad that I was like, I can't be worse than that. I can probably do that, which was a reach. You know, I was even worse than them. But in my head, I was like, it gave me some false confidence. So I went to that Friday night mic, and then I went to a Monday night mic at the Irish Rover that a comedian, Oren B, ran. And, you know, there are no mics right now, but forever, it's a great mic, a staple of the Denver scene at the Irish Rover. And so my plan was to just watch that night. And that's what I did. And I kind of figured out like how many minutes the sets were and, you know, how you get the mic from the host. Like, I didn't know any of that stuff and just basic logistic stuff. And then I got into my head, I'm going to come back next week. And I like typed up, you know, my bit and printed it out and practiced in the mirror with the proverbial hairbrush, you know, yes. And did that. And then went back and was like nauseous. Like so sick to my stomach, and got there like an hour and 15 minutes early. Was like the fourth person to sign up, you know, but ended up going up 37th or whatever, you know, like way, way late, which is, you know, now I understand it. But at the time I was, you know, a little bit frustrated, and I must have missed an announcement because in my head I thought I was doing, I think it was 4 minutes of material, but at some point he announced, hey, we're doing 3 minute sets now. So he lit me way earlier than I thought. And in my head, I'm like, I'm killing up here and wait till they get to my big finish. In reality, I was not killing. I was anything. I mean, I was maybe killing the people by boredom in the audience. And he lit me and I had to get off stage before finishing my bit. And I kind of yelled at Oren. Oren, I love you. You're the best. But that was not my best in first open mic experience. Do not ever yell at the host or even raise your voice. I don't think I yelled, but I was definitely displeased that I felt like I got shafted a minute after hours and hours of waiting. But that was just a good preview. The fact that I came back after that has powered me through so much ever since.
That's awesome. And so you think that that more comedians should write books or write stuff like that? Not necessarily about their first year, but do you think that's a good thing for them?
You know, everybody has a different style. I think, you know, some people, for me, you know, I have a background in literature and stuff like that. So I had the kind of tools to write, I guess. So it was a way that I could excel. I felt like, you know, it was kind of an unconventional path. I think a lot of comedians, you know, they're hilarious on TikTok or Instagram or they do sketch comedy or they're in an improv troupe or whatever. I think everybody should find something besides pure stand-up that kind of differentiates them, gives them something to talk about. Like recently I've been big into radio stuff. Like I did a couple radio interviews recently. And the cool. whole secret with the radio stuff is you make it easy on the DJ and the radio management. You tell them, hey, here are topics I can be funny about. And here's what I'm knowledgeable about, and just pull me in whenever you need that kind of content. And they're desperate for that stuff. Mm. So if you organize it well, you know, it does, you know, maybe you're an amazing basketball player and that's your thing, you know, bring me in when the NBA is popular and I'll riff and joke about the NBA or whatever. So my short answer is no, I don't think everybody should go out and write a book. If you're good at writing, sure. Like start a blog. You know, a Medium post, you know, try and submit articles to the, you know, I book shows now, like online shows. I just had Rekha Shankar on, gosh, I hope I pronounced that right. I think I didn't, but I apologize, Rekha. She was incredible. And she wrote an article for The New Yorker. You know, she's been in Netflix and a movie with Zach Galifianakis and all kinds of stuff. But like, if you can get published in The New Yorker writing comedy, that's a high bar. That's pretty cool.
That's awesome. So if you had to start comedy over today, right? And okay. you had just your book, right? Let's say your book is your basis for that. What thing would jump out at you right away and say, you know what? This is a landmine that I'm going to avoid this time. What would that be? Besides yelling at the at the host.
Yeah, I mean, that's an obvious one. There's so many things I would redo. That's a great question, by the way. I have a web series called Mark Masters. It's very creative. There's like 27 hours of me driving comedians to faraway mics, like an hour, 45 minutes. We talk the whole way there. We get on stage and we talk a little bit on the way back. And that was the one question that I asked every comedian, and it was selfish. You know,
it's a selfish question for
sure. I admired and who were above me in the pecking order, and just, you know, getting knowledge from them. So if you're interested in that, check out, find it on YouTube or whatever podcast.
We'll link it in the podcast too.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. For me, be nice to the host, for sure. Here's a weird one. Like, there's so many obvious ones. Bring a padded seat. Like, this is so bizarre and weird, but I have a shoulder issue that almost led to required surgery from sitting in bad bar stools and chairs for so many hours. And I had no idea that I could. I mean, I'm kind of an old man, I guess. I can't sit in a stool for 4 hours anymore without not being able to move my shoulder the next day.
Interesting.
So I would say that's the weird insider tip. I'd say, Mark, go get a purple chair seat, buy the most expensive one, the one the long haul truckers get, and don't be embarrassed carrying it around mic to mic. You know, people will just, they'll love you for who you are. Just go for it.
I love that. That's a good one.
I'd say the more obvious one would just be, don't give up. You know, just keep trying. It's all about failing again and again. You get a little bit better with every failure, and write all the time. Like,
yes.
If you think you're writing enough, you're not writing enough. Write more jokes, keep writing. And it's so important right now during the pandemic. There's this thing on Twitter called joke prompt. And every day at 8 Eastern, it pops out another word. Today's word was platform. And so people from all over the world were writing jokes about platforms. And I every morning, it's like doing yoga or getting on the exercise bike for half an hour. I'll just brainstorm about the word of the day and write some jokes, and they're okay. You can check out my Twitter, The Mark Masters, and you can go back 30 days and see 30 days of jokes. But I feel like I'm getting better at it. You know, I definitely over several years, I'm getting better. And part of that is a bit of a cheat code. I don't know if you've recognized this, but you know, you start writing a joke and then you put in a joke that you wrote a couple years ago into that joke. You know, it's just a little bit extra flavor, make it a little spicier. You know, you just happen to mention a dog in a story, but you already wrote a joke about a dog a few years ago that you kind of abandoned. Well, bring it back now. And it's not, you know, great on its own, but as a little bit of flavoring to a longer bit, it's a, you know, I used to wonder how people came up with all this material, and after seeing the same people perform year after year, you kind of decode, okay, I remember him telling that joke 2 years ago. He changed the wording and put it into this new joke, and now it's terrific. It's really good. Yeah. So,
and that's what I do. Yeah, I wrote jokes. I actually have just a spread of a Word document for every year, and I just add jokes during the whole year, and so I have all the way back to 2015 or 2014, but I think it's 138 pages worth of jokes that I've written. And it's
wow.
It's just, that's just, I do that same thing because, well, mine is more the Seinfeld method, where I've just got to write it, at least write jokes every day, write something every day. Yeah. Don't break the chain. So I don't do it. And if I don't, and I may not write them directly in the Word document, I'll write them in my phone or whatever, or in the notepad. And I've woken up in the middle of the night to just write a joke down in my notepad and then put it back down. And sometimes they're good. Sometimes you wake up and you're like, what was I thinking last night? That was terrible. You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I do the same thing in my phone with the notes. And one of my favorite things is just going back to a random note. You know, I'll keep them for 5 to 10 days and I'll just read through all the stuff in there. And there'll be things that I never return to, just something I thought was funny for a second. I don't know, net worth was one that I wrote down today. That's all I wrote down was net worth. But I'm going to remember, I was thinking, that's a funny phrase. Maybe there's something with a net there, net worth business. Who knows what it is? But I'll probably go back to that in 6 months. And I don't know if you guys do crosswords. Recently during the pandemic, I basically turned into a very old man. All I do is walk. All I do is walk. Everything I do is in between walks. It's how am I going to fill time before my next walk? If the malls were open, I'd probably be walking into malls. But I do crossword. Everything I do is I drink a lot of tea. I'm doing crosswords. And the funny thing about crosswords is sometimes you can't answer a question. And if you just sleep on it or do something else for 20 minutes, your brain subconsciously solves the riddle. And I think the same thing is true with joke writing. If you just sleep on something, or you know, take a nap, or do some yoga, or just get out of your head for a little bit, go for a walk. Sometimes the joke it comes together like the Matrix. It's magic. It's cool.
That's funny, because I started doing coding recently, like Python coding and learning Python, and I have the same thing where I'm like, I can't figure this out, and then I like walk away and I'll do something else, and like I'll be in the middle of something and I'm like, oh, that's the answer, I missed this thing, and I'm like, go back and, you know, I leave it open so I can get back in there and write more code.
I think that's an incredibly redeeming thing about the pursuit of comedy. Like, we're not all going to become Jerry Seinfeld,
no,
but we're all learning things that are going to make us better in whatever field or area we want to get better at. Maybe other than relationships. That's the worst one.
Actually, my
a lot and not emotionally available, maybe the way you're supposed to be. But everything else you're going to get better at.
I would think that's true. But my wife told me the other day, she said, as soon as this is over and you go back to the club, you go every night. I'm tired of seeing you here. And I was like, oh, okay. That was weird. She's like, you got to go every night. And I was like, why not? Like, why are you pushing on and off? She's like, cause you haven't gone in like 6 months. I'm like, I can't go anywhere. Like, where do you want me to go? And she's like,
there's nothing to do. Have you done any like drive-in or parking lot?
No, we haven't done drive-in or parking lot. We've done some Zoom stuff. We've done a couple private benefits. But no, I haven't done any.
If you don't mind me saying, I do run a Friday night weekly showcase. It's only 30 minutes long. We've had comics from 5 continents, 8 countries,
that's
21
awesome.
States. It's really turned into something pretty cool. We get regulars who come back every week in the audience. So I'd love to have you guys on.
Yeah.
You know, we'll figure this out offline and I'll get you. We're booked out like 2 months. But
any
of the comics who are listening, markmasters.co/showcase. And there's a contact form there. Just send me a note with your name, your location, and a short video. It can be online or in person, and I'll get you on the schedule. And it's been a lot of fun. A lot of people don't like the virtual stuff, but it's funny. A lot of people that 6 months ago said they weren't interested in doing online stuff, they're coming back around and reaching out to me like, hey, you still got those spots? Like, what's going on with your showcase?
That's the thing is,
because the venues are closing, you know, anything, any kind of outdoor stuff, it's getting too cold, at least in Colorado, to do outdoor stuff. And partly just people are kind of bored, I think, you know, they're realizing this isn't going to be, you know, back in March, we all thought it was 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and it's been much longer than people anticipated. And I'm kind of, I'm prepared if it takes all next year, which is awesome. You know, I hope that isn't the case. You know, I hope springtime, like a lot of people are thinking things will open up and we'll have the vaccine and whatnot, but you don't know. And some of these clubs might not come back as businesses, and people might not be interested in going the same way they used to. It might take a while. I mean, I'm old. I remember 9/11. All the open micers I'm with, they like tell jokes about, I was in third grade for 9/11. I'm like, oh my goodness. I'm so old. But
I was in the Navy. I was in the Navy during 9/11.
Oh man. Well, thank you for your service.
No, it was honestly, actually, that was the weirdest thing, because we were doing practice things for like terrorism attacks off the coast of California. And I woke up in the morning, and over the PA system, they're saying, you know, a plane is flown into the World Trade Center. I was like, man, somebody has a real good imagination. That's a real crazy. Like, I don't know who thought of that, but that is insane, right? So I get up, I brush my teeth, I put on my stuff, I go up to eat breakfast, and I get my food. I go on the mess decks. It's dead quiet. I'm like, what is going on? The TVs are on CNN, and there's the plane, like the first plane. And then
it was a scary time. And it was over quickly, but it took, you know, a year plus for people to get back to feel. Some people didn't fly for years. And, you know, people who lived in New York City still have issues sometimes with loud noises or you know. So it could take us a long time to get back to what we consider normal.
I went to Disney World a couple weeks ago. I don't care. I'm gonna do whatever I'm gonna do. I'm gonna live my life. Like, I just want the clubs to open so I can get up and do some more. I have more material. I have more stuff. I just want to work on the stuff, and I want to get back out there. This was gonna be the year. Luke and I we were planning with another friend of ours, David Studebaker. We were planning on doing a special and filming stuff and making out. Just not, you know, how this has worked out has not really been the way that I wanted, but I pivoted on other stuff. And that's the thing is, as comedians, we have to learn to pivot, right? You are running virtual shows, you have the book, you do all these things. That, I mean, I know that everyone hates sometimes when I say, you know, be a comedypreneur, be the person who turns something, your funny stuff into money, turn your funny into money, to do that, you're doing it. That's exactly, you're living that life.
You got to find the silver linings and things. And sometimes it's, I waited 3 hours for 3 minutes of stage time and there's only three people in the audience, but you got one person to crinkle their eyes a little bit during one tag you added and you go home like, yes, I did it. You know, a pandemic, a global worldwide pandemic that hasn't happened for 100 years is can arguably be harder to find a silver lining in. But I feel like I've even found a silver lining in that. Like the Vail comedy show that I run used to be in person. We'd get like 125 people in a small brewery space. So people were really excited about being on that show. But I had to cancel months of booked shows. And then I brought it back online and it's been great. Like I can work with comics in 6 different states and nobody knows or cares if they're wearing pants, but everybody knows that they have awesome TV credits. Like I'm getting, you know, Conan, Letterman, HBO, Netflix, Comedy Central, you know, people on This Is Not Happening, people with 30-minute Comedy Central specials. They're all doing my little Vail comedy show, which has turned into, you know, it turned into something much bigger than I anticipated. Just through hard work and persistence. I think if I could go back and tell myself something, I just remind myself that if you're persistent at something, it can turn into something big, like small changes. I'm reading this book right now. I think it's called Atomic Habits.
Okay.
But it's a basic idea. It's just the idea that if you make a 1% change every day, it can turn into something big in the long run. And that's really what, to me, what open mic comedy was all about. I wanted to do 100 mics and it was like, I'm going to do one at a time, figure out where they are, figure out who I need to know and how I need to get to these places. And I got to 100 and I was like, all right, I got to get to 500. How am I going to get to 500? Let's start. I want to do mics in 5 different states. How can I do that? You know, you just make these little goals and you crack away at it. And eventually they turn into like the Comedy Test Kitchen, the Friday night showcase I do. In the beginning, it was so bad. Like the tech didn't work. The comics I was getting were not familiar with doing online comedy and weren't really that good. And now at this point, like I said, I have a regular audience. The tech is terrific. You know, we have live laughers. I'm getting cruise ship comics with dry bar specials reaching out to do spots on this thing. And I'm not, I don't know if I should say this, but it's an unpaid showcase. Like right. The spots aren't paid. But people in the beginning of the pandemic, nobody wanted to do the show. And now I'm getting like serious comedians who are like, yeah, I could use 5 minutes of stage time to just work out some stuff because I'm rusty and I want to experiment.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love that you're doing that. Thank you so much for doing that. I mean, seriously, when the pandemic started, I was like, it'll be 2 weeks, a month. Zoom's not going to catch on, and, you know, no big deal. And then as it went on and I was talking to more of my friends who are comedians, and I was like, oh man, this is going to change everything. And being ahead of the curve, you're ahead of the curve by having a show that's, you know, you can produce anywhere is amazing. So,
And to reemphasize, I started behind the curve and I just made little changes. It was every week for 30 minutes and I've just gotten a little bit better every week. You know, it's like 2 steps forward, 1 step back, 2 steps forward, 1 step back. I used to say in the open mic days, getting better as a comedian is 2 steps forward, 1 step stuck in a sticky basement bar. It's actually kind of nice not having to drive and stay up till 1 in the morning. Mm-hmm. You can find silver linings in it.
I love it. I love the way that you do it. So we're gonna link all your stuff. Can you just give a shout out where people can find you and then information about any upcoming shows or information?
Yeah. I have some shows I definitely want to promote. But yeah, www.markmasters.co, like Colorado, .com, is a website. I'm not on Facebook or Instagram. I'm on Twitter at TheMarkMasters. Check out Joke Prompt. Check out the Comedy Test Kitchen. It's a Friday night online showcase. This is coming out in time for 2 shows I'm doing on Friday, December 11th. Friday, December 11th, there's a comedy club outside of Boston in Somerville, mm-hmm. Massachusetts called The Comedy Studio. I'm doing an amazing lineup on that show. It's $10 and $12 the day of to watch. Totally worth it. Go get your tickets for that. And then that same night, like I'm literally getting off that show and I'm doing, this is how cool the pandemic is. This is a silver lining. I'm doing a show in San Diego with Jennifer Mason. Incredible show. Last month's show, she had 150 or 175 people in the Zoom audience.
Wow. Like,
amazing. Amazing. It's called Sofa King. Check that out. That's also Friday, December 11th. I'm really excited to be on that show. So that's a couple of the shows. And markmasters.co always has my upcoming tour dates and Yeah, I'd love it. And if you're listening to this and you're wondering what you should do is go to my website. There's a contact form. I respond to every message. Send me a question. Be like, I've been doing this 3 years. What do I do about holding the mic in my hand? Or I've been doing this for 3 seconds. How do I write a punchline? I'd love to email with you and, you know, maybe even get on a Zoom chat at some point. Let me say one other thing. I recently did a senior show, like a show for senior citizens.
I love those. I
called it Pro Bozo Work. I waived my fee and put that together. And that was really fun. So today is, we're recording this on Giving Tuesday. Mm. So if you want to help me give, think of your network. And if you know a nursing home, a health, anything where there are senior citizens, a good cause group, have them get in touch with me and I'll put together a comedy show. Very clean, very fun. These things, they're hilarious. We had like a heckler in the last show,
which of course.
He was a sweet man who was just lonely. He wanted to talk after each punchline pretty much. And he was the best, but he was effectively like an open mic bar heckler. And then there was another lady who was vision impaired. And so whenever her tablet got a notification, it sounded like Stephen Hawking was heckling the comic because it was reading the notification. And, you know, it was it wasn't perfect, but it was a lot of fun. And we made people laugh and smile. And so I'd love to do more of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love stuff like that because those are the best stories. Those are the things you're going to remember forever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So thanks. I've listened to a bunch of your episodes. They're all terrific. The Alex Cooper episode is amazing. Yeah. I understand you have another really good episode coming up. Yeah. I'm really excited to listen to that one. And
we try to always bring stuff. So thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Luke, where can people find you at?
Luke LaCoy, all over the internet.
All over the, you were about to say interweb, weren't you?
I was. I held it in.
I knew you were going to do it. My wife used interweb today, too. And I was like, what's wrong with you? So you can also check us out on comedypreneur.com. That's where all the blog posts are and information and stuff. JamesDCrevison.com or anywhere that you get podcasts. Also, check out the Comedypreneur Show. It's on everything now. I put it on Anchor. I wanted to kind of share that with people. It's another show. It's mostly just me interviewing people are talking about tips and tricks for comedy. So much more stuff coming. I love helping people just like Mark. I love helping people and I love helping comedians. I hope that this helps you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Please like, subscribe, and have a great week.